I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Soul School Lesson 21. We are still in the season of Lent. If you celebrate Lent, we're in that season. And if you don't celebrate it, this will still apply just as much to you. This title of this lesson is called Testing Your Faith. And it's something we all go through in life. We all go through trials and testing, and it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from or what your background is. We all go through these periods of time, these desert places, and these times of just trial and tribulation. And so I wanted to cover that time, and I wanted to cover it in a different kind of context than you might be used to, and maybe even a different kind of way than I typically talk about on Soul School. But during the time of Lent is the 40 days before Easter, not including Sundays. And the number 40 is very significant in the Bible and for the ancient Jewish people. 40 was a symbolic number. It was specifically put in the Bible to mean trial. And so trials and tribulations were associated specifically with this number. So anytime you see that crop up in the Bible, you'll know that that was kind of a message out to the listeners, because the Bible wouldn't have been read. We have the Bible now as a collection of books. The Bible's really a library, a whole collection of books put together. But of course, in ancient times, it was just a bunch of scrolls that would get pulled out and unrolled and then read, and people wouldn't just take a scroll home. It would be read in a communal way, and people would listen. And that's why the Bible's written in a very specific way. It's written in a chiastic structure. So the chiastic structure is almost like if you think of a sandwich. So there's like the two pieces of bread on either side, and then there's the meat in the middle. And so what's in the middle of the story is the most important part, and what's on either side supports the middle. And it was written that way, actually, so it would be easy to memorize. And that's why you'll sometimes see that stories will sort of seem to repeat themselves, and it almost looks like people will say, oh, it was redacted, and these places were added in by different people. But even ancient stories like Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, they all have chiastic structure because these stories tended to be done orally first and not written down first. And so they were transmitted orally and memorized. And people had huge, huge portions of stories memorized, and just unbelievably huge amounts of material memorized that were not written down, and people didn't rely on writing like we do now. And people didn't look things up. It was all in their head. Enormous amounts of information were memorized, and whole books. And so to make it a little easier for them to memorize enormous amounts of information, they would write it in a way that would serve as a memory aid. And so that's why the Bible was written in this sort of unique way, not in a linear fashion like we write stories now, with a beginning, middle, and end. It would actually have, the point was in the middle. So you can think of it as a round trip. So you take a trip, like on a bus, you go to the place you're supposed to go, and that's the point, and then you return home. So when you read stories in the Bible, remember that they're written in a chiastic structure. And if we think about times of testing, we think about the desert wilderness places and the people of Israel wandering through the desert. They wandered through for 40 years. They took Jesus to be ceremonially blessed by the priest 40 days after he was born, and all the babies in Jewish families would be brought before the temple, and they would have an animal sacrifice, which would be eaten as a feast meal to welcome the baby into the community and before God. And that would be after a testing. It's interesting because a newborn baby is a test. It's a test of your patience, and it's a test for the family. And it's a hard time when you're first getting used to a baby and a new presence in your family. And that's a test for a new mom and dad. And Jesus, you know, this God-man portrayed in the Bible, is 30 years old, and he goes into the wilderness full of the Spirit, and he's tested for 40 days. But really, when you think about that, you're thinking, wait, why would God have to be tested? Would he have to be relieved of these impurities in him or sins or something? You know, we are thinking of this wilderness time in our lives as this purifying fire, refining us from desires and sins and all the rest. But if you think about the man Jesus as a 30-year-old growing up in his town, being trained by Joseph in the family tradition, which was probably not exactly carpentry, it was probably manual labor, construction of some sort. And he would be preparing to be a husband and start a family of his own, carry on the family business, and he would be giving up that life and all those expectations and all the promise that comes along with being a Jewish man and a leader in his community. And he'd be taking on something very different, a ministry and a mission, a cruel death and rejection by his family, his community, everything he knew. And so I'm sure that there's anxiety and tension and a whole bunch of things you have to sort through when you're at the beginning of this sort of thing. And we often don't think sometimes when we read these stories of the gravity emotionally of the situation, as if it's just a story, it wasn't a real person. But we do know the historical Jesus would have been going through some very real, very heavy, very deep and disturbing emotions, and spending 40 days out in the wilderness for some alone time would have been quite an agonizing time. And fasting for that time would have been a very focusing opportunity and would have been very clarifying and a test of faith, in terms of faith is where the gaps are filled in where certainty is not. So certainty in the sense of Jesus would be, you know, having a certain life, having certain expectations for a normal life. And what he was getting instead was a lot of precarious situations, a lot of rejection. And that was going to obviously be very disturbing. And I think that something for us to take in during our wilderness times, during our personally difficult times, to think about Lent and preparing for spring, preparing our hearts for springtime and rebirth, to remember that this time of testing and the wilderness period of our lives, whether it's happening now or it'll happen sometime soon, is a necessary process in our lives. It's not that something's gone wrong. It's not that there's a problem. Thinking that a wilderness time is a problem or a mistake or a really bad thing, it just comes with the territory of being human. Even when you're a God-man, like Jesus was, something hadn't gone wrong that Jesus was in the wilderness. Jesus was human, so something was fine. It just was necessary and difficult. And sometimes I think in the Christian tradition, and maybe this is true in other traditions too, I'm not sure, but sometimes in the Christian tradition, sadly, we reject negative feelings quite easily, and we want to stick with just those happy feelings, and we push those other ones quickly aside because they're uncomfortable and maybe we don't have enough room for them. But Jesus actually embraced the full spectrum of human emotion, from weeping when his friend died and weeping for the sadness that his friends were going through in the grief of the death of their brother Lazarus. And he had anger. He rebuked his disciples at times. He had great joy and laughter. He told jokes. He did shtick. You know, the whole gamut was there. He didn't just section off parts of his humanity for the convenience of others, and neither should we. That should give us license to explore the dark parts, the light parts, and all the in-between parts, and not just try to meet other people's expectations that only the positive, most benign parts of our humanity are the parts that other people can know about. That all those different sides of us need to be embraced, and embraced by ourselves first, because sometimes we're scared of our own dark sides. And if other people can't handle those parts, that we find people who will, or we find spiritual guides that allow us to explore those areas more fully. And I'm actually going to read a few scripture verses in James. So James is the brother of Jesus, and his vernacular is actually really similar to that of Jesus. And he says about trials and tribulations and about having faith. I think it's really poignant, and I'm happy to read this part to you. James says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. If you need wisdom, ask our generous God. God will give it to you. God will not rebuke you for asking. When you ask God, be sure that your faith is in God alone. Do not waver, for a person with divided loyalty is as unsettled as a wave of the sea, which is blown and tossed by the wind." So that gives us a chance to increase our faith, which increases our ability to handle uncertainty, which is part and parcel of life. And so the final thing I'll add here is that the whole idea of being tested can be misunderstood completely. So sometimes we think to ourselves, oh, I realize what's happening here. I've put things into a new perspective. This situation isn't just random. I'm being tested. God's testing me. And now I feel a lot better about my situation. And that's great when we get some clarity on things and we can think, oh, good. I know I'm being tested, so I have a better attitude now. But here's something to really bear in mind about a time of testing. When we're being tested, God isn't trying to find out something about us. The test is for us to know something about ourselves. The test teaches us something about ourselves, not to punish us or to discourage us in any way. The whole point is that we know more about ourselves. And I think we've gotten a little off sometimes because we remember tests from school and they were for grades, and we get a test paper and we think, oh, the teacher's going to know what I don't know. I'm finally, you know, they're going to find out I didn't study. And we think that the test tells the teacher what we do and don't know. But we forget that God already knows us completely, intimately, through and through, better than we know ourselves. So the test is never for God to know about us. It doesn't even matter about that. God doesn't need a test to know anything about us. We need the test for ourselves to know more about us. The more we know about ourselves, the more other people can know about us, because we can't allow other people to know us until we truly know ourselves. The test teaches us something that we couldn't know otherwise. And it's for our benefit in the first place. It's not to destroy us or knock us down. It's so that we go, oh, you know what? I actually responded really badly in this situation, and now I know better. I'm glad I found that out, and I think I'm going to try it differently the next time. Or the test might be like, you know what? I think I was really surprised that I didn't panic in that situation, or I rose to the occasion in that situation. I didn't know that until I was put through that, and now I'm glad I know. God is not surprised by our response. He's not, or she, God is not wringing his hands. Or her hands, doesn't have hands, but isn't worried, what's going to happen? Oh my goodness, I am so concerned. What's going to happen in this test? It just doesn't work like that at all. We cannot think of God as human. That's probably the one worst thing we do when we're thinking about God. We will personify God all the time. Start thinking of God as some guy in the sky with a beard. And it's just a crazy thing to think that God is human and somewhere else. And God is spirit and nothing like a human. When Jesus came, it was a way for us to understand how the Spirit of God can incarnate us. I mean, that is the entire point. The Spirit of God can incarnate us. But God as God is actually nothing like us. God is other. And so when we project onto God human traits, we're really getting it wrong. And to think God is waiting around wondering if we're going to fail a test is to get it completely backwards. That test is for us, and God is love. God is spirit, and God is love. And when we come back to love, we come home. And if we can just understand that really basic thing, when we come to love, we come home. When we come to love in others, we come home also. My request for you today is to go to the Spark My Muse Lesson 21 page for this episode and click the link to watch the video component that I created for this episode. There'll be a lot more information, and I move on to other topics about how to read the Bible well and my favorite resource for doing that. And a couple other topics that I'm going to keep as a surprise. I have a worksheet for you as well. It's completely free this time. It's not part of the Varsity Club pay as you go. I just want to give it to you for free. It was my birthday, and that's something I do for fun for you, a little extra goodie. I'm happy to share it with you. I wish you a very blessed day. If you enjoyed this show, please let me know. And if you enjoyed the show, please share it with at least one other person. I'm so glad you're listening, and I truly hope you have a very blessed day. Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com.